Hi, this is Jen Rubin. I've got great news. I'm going to be appearing live with the one and only George Conway. Yes, at the 92nd Street Y in New York City, November 12th. Get your tickets now. You can go to the 92nd Street Y website, or you can go to politicon.com/tour. It's going to be wild.
Hello, and welcome to Politics War Room with James Carville, and I'm Al Hunt. Now, remember, we love taking your questions. So write into politicswarroom@gmail.com or send a tweet to @Politicon for next week's show. Now, we're going to get to as many as we can, but don't forget to tell us where you're from. We do have some exciting and some good news. The documentary, Carville, Winning is Everything Stupid, is out now. Get updates and some great behind-the-scenes content by following James on Twitter @JamesCarville and on his new TikTok @RealJamesCarville. You can also get the text updates about what's next for Politicon and Politics War Room by signing up at politicon.com. Tell your friends about us and remind them to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast. And please check out the links to our sponsors, Miracle Made, The Washington Post, and ExpressVPN. We thank you for supporting these sponsors because it really helps make this podcast happen. James, it's up to you and me today. This is such a dreary day. We didn't want to invite a guest and expose them to this. I have been involved with scores of election nights, including 14 presidential elections. This is by far the most dismal, the most depressed I have ever been. Trump, a convicted felon who orchestrated a violent mob to assault the Capitol, a man of no morality or integrity, won a clear-cut victory. We ought to say right away, he won. I don't want to hear any liberals blaming it on the Russians or anyone else. He won a clear victory. The Senate was a disaster, losing terrific lawmakers like Sherrod Brown and John Tester, probably Bob Casey, who was beaten by the private equity candidate, Senator Dave McCormick, R. Private Equity. The House may well go too. That would give Trump a quaffecta. I made up that word. But if he has the White House, the Senate, the House, and the Supreme Court, democracy is in real danger. I actually think Harris ran a pretty good campaign, raised a lot of money, creamed him in the debate, had a good close, two costly mistakes. She should have picked Josh Shapiro instead of Tim Walz. Tim Walz was a good guy. He really brought her nothing. I suspect Shapiro certainly would have brought her Pennsylvania. I don't know if he would have brought anything else, but Bobby Casey would probably still have a Senate seat and a couple House seats. The biggest was not separating from Joe Biden. Biden was the biggest loser Tuesday night, actually. His stubborn refusal to stay in this race when many people knew he was just too damn old was a disqualifier. She should have distanced herself earlier at the convention. Again, I don't know if it would have made the difference, but in an otherwise good campaign, that was a big mistake. James.
Well, I think there were a couple big mistakes and something overreaching. First of all, correct. If by Biden staying in so late, we didn't have any process. We had all of this unused cardboard sitting on the sideline. Okay. And I mean really good unused, you know, that if we'd have had some kind of an open process, and it would have been much better. It might, you know, like I said, it could have been worse, but it sure could have been a lot better. And the big, you're correct that she didn't separate herself from Biden, but what killed the Democrats and what killed Biden was a sense of disorder. And part of the sense of disorder was the unfortunate events of what I would refer to as the woke era. we got beyond it, but it never, the image stuck in people's minds that the Democrats wanted to defund the police, that they wanted the empty prisons. You know, the immigration stuff, obviously, again, a big mistake, but more importantly, it created to the perception of disorder. The Afghanistan withdrawal, while I think Biden was 100% right in getting out, it was disorderly. Inflation was a sign of people's disorder, that there wasn't anyone in charge. And, you know, if we learn anything from this, is change is what wins elections, particularly, you know, people are pointing out, you know, it's a 65% wrong track country. And in a 65% wrong track country, we were offering people the same track. And you know, you could say it's easy in hindsight, but the basic fundamentals of politics were not being paid attention to. And you're right, the campaign didn't, except for that one answer, which was the money question, by the way. That, just say that one question, but that one question became the whole definition of the campaign. And, you know, if you answer 99 questions really well, but you get the big one wrong, the outcome is going to be wrong. And, you know, it's easy to say in retrospect, but the reason it's easy to say is because truisms in American politics showed themselves to be, well, what they are, truisms. And now the question becomes, where do the Democrats go from here? And
well, James, that's exactly the question I was going to ask you. What should the Democrats do right now?
Okay. I have an idea. Let's go back to something we use, because we need a leader. There's nobody. I mean, Schumer's not been, you know, really hurt by this because they have a majority anymore. You know, if Hakeem has majority, there's no Nancy Pelosi that we had in the first term. All right, there's not a identifiable opposition leader. What I suggest we do is something we used to do that we've abandoned for probably good reason, and that is we have a midterm mini convention. Let's get some of this talent out front. Let people see it. Give people something to do. Give people something to organize around. Because right now, the entire party, and when I say the entire party, I mean not just the leadership, but the rank and file, is dazed, confused. They don't know which way to turn. There's no heir apparent. There's no, I mean, there's nothing. There's just a giant vacuum. And the only way that you can fill a vacuum is, well, you got to start somewhere. And, you know, people say, well, how are you going to select it? And it's going to be the whole, everything that Democrats always do. They're going to say, well, you figure out how to select it and, you know, invite five people to address the mini convention and get people together and talk, you know, how we reorganize, how we redo. But I don't think we have 4 years. I think we got to do this all in preparation for the midterms and take the lessons that we didn't learn any new lessons, but boy, did we relearn some old lessons. Wow. But that they got to get some assignment, something pushing forward to give us a rallying point for the opposition here.
Well, it certainly can be done. It was done three times before, so it's certainly possible to do. And I think it's certainly an interesting idea. I have one, too. First, I want to say that I, on the Republican side, the villain is Mitch McConnell. He made a colossal mistake in February of 2021, as Mike Tackett captures in his terrific book on McConnell. He assumed that Trump would go away. He probably could have gotten the votes to impeach him and to assure he never ran again for election. It would have been a big pushback then. There would have been resentment. But you know what? That resentment would have been worth it not to have Trump. But he choked. But let me give you I think your idea of a convention is a very good one. I think there needs to be something set up, a Trump Watch organization. funded, really well funded. I'm talking about big funding, well staffed, the existing infrastructure, the ACLU, the Center for Budget and Policy Priorities, certainly a minority on Capitol Hill. This isn't like Reagan or Bush winning. This is a challenge to what we're all about. These people will be corrupt. They're not transparent. And I think there needs to be an organization set up that looks at them from a legal standpoint, policy, politics, and media. And it has to be very robust, and it has to be well-led. And I have written today, we are channeling a look for a young James Carville. Because seriously, that's what we need. I think just if it's business as usual, and you know, the Democrats file a minority report in the House, and they put a couple people on Face the Nation, this challenge is much bigger than that.
Well, the one of the logical places to go to, but it's, you know, all right, don't start laughing when I say this. All right, everybody, just calm down. And if ideally the DNC would come together, elect a chairperson who could articulate the party's vision, who could organize some of this stuff, who could do this and that. We just don't have a very much of a history of having a strong Democratic National Committee. But if which I think what you're saying for, Dan, is a really wise point. Maybe one of the things it could do is somebody could, of some prestige, could call a group of 25 leaders, mostly financiers, but influential people, and have different organizations come make their pitch to them about why they'd be more effective in doing this. But that certainly needs to be a party leader of some sense that there's a process to get one, and we don't have time to just let everything develop organically. Some of these issues have to be forced.
Yeah, James, yeah. I don't think the DNC can do it. I just think not only the history.
I know
you weren't suggesting that, but I think a new organization, I suggested Trump Watch, you can call whatever you want to, but I'm talking about probably funded with, you know, $100-200 million. This is not something that can be done on the cheap. Get really smart people and watch Trump every day. I'm very confident that the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Atlantic, Bulwark, and others will certainly try to scrutinize Trump. But he is so dishonest. He's so disingenuous. He is so non-transparent that there has to be just a steady, watch of this real threat. We haven't faced anything like this before, and maybe there's a different way to frame it. Maybe there's a different way to organize it. But just we have to do something more than business as usual.
I go back and just say, ideally, it's certainly no evidence that it would have any role now. But in the ideal world, that would be the best place. Maybe some of the existing organizations, I've got to say, because I'm associated with American Bridge, but, you know, you have Future Forward, you got a lot of different advocacy groups around Washington, but, you know, we have to shake it off, and there's no person to come up with a plan. There's no voice. The party has no voice right now. That's the big problem we have. And the sooner that we can start addressing that, the better we're going to be. And that's why I think a midterm convention would at least give us some focus. But we're going to have to think differently here. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, I agree. I'm going to send you what I wrote today. Yeah. And I did say I was channeling for a young James Carville. That's you need someone tough. I don't want...
Because James Carville is 80 in...
I'm not looking for an 80-year-old. We went through that in the White House. I'm looking for a 40-year-old James Carville. There's got to be something close to that anyway. James, I want to tell you, as I said, it was a dreary night. I was very depressed. There was one for me great bright spot, which I have not talked about or written about in this election, and that was the race in Nassau County, New York, New York 4. My son helped Laura Gillen unseat a Republican incumbent, and it really was one of the very few bright spots of last night. And I drank a glass of wine to that, James. And I must say, you and Paul Begala helped her, too.
Congratulations, Ben and Lauren and everybody there. It's, you know, it's great. It's, you know, we got something. We got a place to start. Now let's get to work on 2026.
Yep. It just, I think of the people who were lost. It's not, I mentioned Brown and Tester, but that new crop of Republicans coming in. I mean, Bernie Moreno, the kind of sleazy car dealer from Ohio, the guy out in Montana who I've never met, don't knowing about, but he, you know, he seemed to lie about wounds, whether he shot himself, whether it was a war wound. I mean, you really have some bad people. I think Pennsylvania in the House, if the Democrats don't win back the House, California and Pennsylvania will be the culprits. Pennsylvania, there were three seats up, two Democrats, one Republican. I thought the Democrats, Wild and Cartwright, had a shot. It appears they both lost. And the bigger disappointment was Scott Perry, the election-denying, lying Freedom Caucus head from a swing district, and he pulled it out with Josh Shapiro on top of the ticket. That wouldn't have happened, but anyway. Anything you want to add before we go drown our sorrows, James?
No, I don't. I mean, it's going to be difficult time here, and they're going to start appointing people, and, you know, they're going to be moving the machinery of the levers of power pretty quickly here in a very adversarial way. And it just, they're all criminals. I mean, look at Rudy Giuliani, who ordered to turn all that over, showing up in a Mercedes that doesn't even belong to him. And all these people are going to be pardoned. These criminals are going to be out on the street. They're going to be glorified. The courts are, I can't tell you how crooked. Do you think that Alito and Thomas and all of them just ramp up every gift, ramp up every corporate interest you can get? Here it comes. And by the way, they have an authority of an election behind them. And we've said this before, Trump told you what he was going to do. So don't be surprised when he takes off doing it. Don't be surprised.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, other than the fact that he hid his position on abortion and lied about it. And by the way, you watch, he is going to order the FDA to curtail the abortion pill. That's going to affect an awful lot of women. James, I thought abortion would be a big issue yesterday. It was not. It carried, referendums carried 57%, but lost in Florida where it took 60%. It didn't bring out voters the way I thought it would. I don't have an explanation because I was wrong. When he curtails the use of the abortion pill, maybe that'll bring it home to more people. But
I thought, look, the Iowa poll, you know, I mean, none of it panned out. And, you know, we're going to have to unearth all this. But while it's being unearthed, we got to try to get moving in a better we got to be an opposition party. That's all there is to it.
Absolutely.
An opposition party with no power.
And let me tell you, screw this loyal opposition. You have to reflect what he is. He has no interest in trying to find common ground, no interest in, you know, trying to unify. He is on the attack. He's going to try to indict people. He talked about executing people. I don't think he can do that. He talked about the enemy within. And you have to fight that. You know, we have to fight that fire with fire, and it's going to be a tough couple of years.
You know that they're going to like slash the shit out of social insurance. You can see that Musk and all these guys, you know, Peter Thiel, they didn't grab the levers of government to keep entitlements in place and to keep taxes on incomes over a half million. I mean, you know, we're going to have a bunch of they're going to propose a bunch of unpopular things that they've got to ramp through, and we have to be effective. I'll come back to this. Whatever they do, they should make Paul Begala the communications director of the party and have him be the spokesperson on TV and organize the opposition. There's nobody better. You go with the best you got.
I agree. I'd make him the communications and top, one of the top dogs in my Trump Watch organization, whatever it is.
He
is the best. Yeah. You're right.
Right.
The other thing, James, I haven't looked at all the internal numbers. It appears that Democrats did really poorly with Hispanics, really poorly. And they better, have to think about why.
The mail issue was an issue. And, we got to figure out there, we didn't do that. No. We didn't. We did not replicate our 2020 coalition. I never thought that we were going to do that. But we didn't expand either. And, we got to figure out a way that we deal with this mail problem that we have that is really significant. And it's really significant among non-white males and lower income males. I don't really get the entire ramifications of it, but it's a huge problem.
Yeah, it sure is. All right, next week hopefully we'll be less gloomy, but it may take longer. Now for the outrage of the week. James, I didn't know which one to pick. There were so many. But I'm going to focus on Ted Cruz, who sadly won against a better candidate and a much better person, Colin Allred. I'm sorry for my Texas friends, Bill Kimball and Paul Begala. The Lone Star State is just gone. Cruz ran on two big themes. One, the claim that he works with the other side in Washington. That comes as a shock to Democrats. The other was to demagogue against trans people, accusing Allred, a former Baylor football star, of wanting to let trans men play in women's sports. Now, we're going to be stuck with him for another 6 years. Remember, Trump accused Cruz's father of being complicit in the Kennedy assassination and then said Cruz's wife was ugly. When it became politically convenient, this tough-talking Texas came crawling back to Trump like a little poodle. You can understand why Barack Obama once noted there was a Supreme Court vacancy, and if he appointed Ted Cruz, there'd be 8 vacancies. Sadly, we have him for another 6 years.
Yeah, I guess my outrage is more of an observation, and I just have to get over the fact that I'm 80 years old and I live in a country that has put a felonious bigot who has no idea of what the world is like, is the most parochial, secular person that you could imagine. And I don't know what percent of this defeat is because we didn't embrace the change message or we kept something too long. That was some flaw in our strategy and our presentation. But at the end of the day, there's still, a lot of people had voted for this, and everything people in Texas knew about Ted Cruz, and the thing that hurt so bad is Colin Allred is the very definition of a really fine person. So I'm going to just, I have to reevaluate. I'm sure I'll come up with something to make me feel good again. But right now today, it's hard. I'll be honest with you. And the hardest thing is that I look across this country and tens of millions of people fell for this shit. And it's depressing. But
it is.
I will snap out of it.
Yeah, you will, but it's hard. It's very
tough. It's not hard to say there have been plenty of criminals, charlatans, con men, traitors, scumbags. We've had all of that before. But I don't. We've never had remotely and people embracing and endorsing this. It's just sickening. Yeah. But this guy got 50%. Okay. They can make the argument. Hitler never got 33. Okay. This is frightening that we would get here. And by the way, in 4% unemployment. Okay, I mean, I'm sorry.
You know, when we talk about all these bad things, I don't know if I mentioned earlier, RFK Jr. is going to be in charge of healthcare policy, ban vaccines and fluoride. He is going to cost hundreds of thousands of lives. That's the kind of things we're talking about, Jane.
Well, just think all other people coming in. I mean, Mark Robinson might get a job as Secretary of Education. He's going to do all of that. And he told you he was going to do it. And you did it, and you voted for him. I'll snap out of it, but I'm in a very, very dark tunnel right now.
Yeah, me too. Now that we've made it past Election Day, let's think about something that's upbeat, something that's good. There's no better time to see what was going on behind the scenes with the ultimate inside look on the 24 election. I'm talking about Carville, Winning is Everything, Stupid, a new documentary by Matt Tarnauer that has tickets for theaters now before it comes out on Max starting November 14th. The film follows our very own James Carville through the current cultural and political landscape, and also delves into his marriage to Republican strategist Mary Madeline, offering an inside look at how they navigate their bipartisan life. Now, if you're looking for an unfiltered take on the state of politics, the Carville-Madeline dynamic, and the drama of the 24 election, you definitely want to get tickets now. The film is screening at select theaters in Louisiana and Virginia. How much are people going to enjoy seeing it on the big screen in your home state?
Yeah, and everybody had the same experience. I think you did too. And it's a significantly better film when you can watch it on a big screen. Some people can't understand. It's a documentary, so it's a very limited release. And we're delighted that we're on CNN twice, and we're going to be on HBO Max, which, you know, will keep it out there and make the movie a lot more accessible. But it's a really well done, well directed. I think it's a great movie, and I could not just that I'm the subject of it, but it also talks about how important power is in doing things, and we have none, and unfortunately we're getting ready to get a real tutorial on the uses and abuses of political power, which are formidable to say the least.
Well, your documentary, which is even better on the big screen, and, you know, I've had more people praise it, and I expect it from people in political life. They just love it, and they're inspired by it. Bob Greenstein, who's one of the great policy wonks in Washington, wrote me the other day, said, I just love the Carville documentary. So it's a great, great range of people. And Doris Goodwin last weekend. And by the way, anybody who hasn't seen our Politics War Room podcast from the Schubert Theater last Saturday with Doris Goodwin, you have to go get it. It was fabulous. But don't wait. Get tickets now at carvilledoc.com/tickets. That's carvilledoc.com/tickets. Or check it out on Max starting November 14th. Now, for updates and some great behind-the-scenes content, follow James on Twitter, at James Carville, and on his new TikTok, at Real James Carville. You're not going to want to miss this, I assure you. Let's go to our listener questions. And I want to say beforehand to many of you who wrote in, you wrote in before the election. So some of those have been overtaken by the sad events of Tuesday. But Greg from West Hartford, Connecticut, James says, who do you see coming up who can inherit the mantle of a great or even a very good orator?
There's several, there are any number of people that are like all world orators in the Democratic Party. I'll just, you know, Andy Beshear, Josh Shapiro, Wes Moore, Raphael Warnock. And there's way more than that. But I mean, these are just, and for God's sake, don't tell me I forgot somebody and didn't mention someone. But that's not, what I'm saying is what I've said all along. The level of talent at the gubernatorial and senatorial level in the Democratic Party is extremely high. And we so far have done a good job of keeping this kind of articulation away from people. I hope that we figure a way to elevate these guys. Mitch Landrieu, I mean, I can't say enough about his oratorical skills. For
Where
sure.
was he during this campaign?
He was a deputy campaign.
No,
chair.
But I mean, I would have had him out front every day.
You know, we did, but you know, Albert, the one distressing thing about this, we won the surrogate battle 95-5. We had two ex-presidents out there. We had every rock star, cultural icon, athlete you could imagine. We had a superior. We reported on it, the field operation, the canvassing, the door-to-door stuff. And, you know, they just stole every dollar. They did none of that. They were vulgar, crude, rude people. And we also raised more money. I mean, you look at all of the intangible advantages we had, and it didn't amount to anything. And, you know, there's still no greater thing in politics than a reason. And Trump, you know, as much as we hated the reason, you know, that everything that happened to you is a result of migration and disorder. And at the end of the day, we had every advantage, but we had the perception of disorder on every kind of level. Foreign policy, border policy, economic policy. At the end of the day, it seems to me that the operative word here is people want order and will pay anything to have order. And I'm not even sure they had a lot of disorder. The border was, crossings were down to almost nothing. The inflation rate is down to almost where the Fed wants it. But, you know, you convinced yourself that it was disorderly out there and you voted accordingly. And at some level, it's the Democrats' fault. We had a lot of talent that we never got out of. We never got them in the playing field. You know, you're sitting there and you lost a game and you look at the bench and you say, God damn, why did we have these guys in the game? But we didn't. So I just think that they ought to either put Paul Begala or Mitch Landrieu or something like that and make them the spokesperson for the party. Give them a title and a allowance and a salary and a staff and get out there and at least have some face of the loyal opposition. And there are other people I could do it to. I'm just two of the best communicators that I've ever seen. I hope that Mitch decides to run for president in 2028, so it might be a reason that he shouldn't do it, but I don't know that. It's way too early to comment on that. But we have to rally the opposition. We got to get some elements in place and then show people what the party has. I mean, Chris Murphy, that's another one. That guy's uber talented. There's a lot of them. Yeah, just everywhere. And I hate mentioning because, you know, I'm always, don't take the obvious of Whitmer. The point is, we got a lot of people that are sitting on a bench, and we got to figure a way to get them in the game here.
James, I'm going to take a matter of personal privilege with this next question, which is from Renee in Iowa City, Iowa. She says, now that we see the results, why was the Iowa polling so wrong at the end? I ran polls for, gosh, almost 25 years with three of the great pollsters I've ever known, Peter Hart, Bob Teeter, and Ann Selzer, who did that Iowa poll. One thing, if you can read the fine print, that and it will always say that poll is within a margin of error, maybe it's 3 points, 95% of the time. Statisticians will tell you, and polling experts will tell you, that that means that probably 5, maybe 2, 3, 4% of the polls are off. Sometimes it's hard to tell. Ann Selzer's poll the Sunday before Iowa was off. It was wrong. That's a rarity for her. She has a track record that very, very few can equal, and she had a bad poll. And every pollster has a bad poll every now and then. If you look at all of Ann's polls, this is the only one that I can think of that was bad. She remains one of the great pollsters in America.
By the way, Dartmouth in Hanover, New Hampshire, had a terrible poll, too.
Yeah, yeah.
They had Paris winning New Hampshire by like 62%.
She won by three or four.
Right. But if I had to go to war with a pollster, Ann Selzer would be who I'd want to be on my side.
Right. And I want to say, in general, the polls weren't off. I mean, there were some bad ones, but not very many. They said it's a very tight election. Most of them had the national election tied. They had most of the battleground states within one or two. That's really the way it ended up. I mean, maybe one or two was a little bit broader.
In this disaster, there's one macro prediction. I know I made it, and I know you agreed with it. And unfortunately, it turned out to be true. If there's seven swing states, the most unlikely scenario is to break 4-3. Okay, that, you know, we were hoping it would break another way. And the lesson, when we have been very consistent, more consistent than any other show, that these things have a tendency to break in the end. We hope, we're optimistic that it breaks our way, but you have to acknowledge the fact it could break. And it broke at the end.
Yeah, it did.
It went against
us. I thought it was going to break for her. It broke for him.
Right. Okay. But what's in place? Change wins elections. All right. Disorder loses elections. Elections break at the end. All right. And those turned out to be really determinative factors in this election. And there's a lot of fundamentals that we did not pay attention to that just bit us, and bit us hard.
James, I'm not quite sure this next one, but see if you make sense of it. James and Kathy Ann in Houston and London say, while you guys were in Boston last weekend, did you swing by the beach at Martha's Vineyard, which we didn't, to berate the reprehensible legal commentators you recently called out? do you know who they're talking about?
I think you're talking about the naked professor.
Oh, are they?
Professor Dershowitz.
Oh my God!
It might have been a little cold for him to be
on
the
beach. Can you imagine?
I wouldn't get within 1,000 miles of Martha Vineyard if I thought he was.
Oh, would that petrify? They add, James and Kathy Ann, you also recently on that note, what will it take to have a more informed media? You know, we may have to take a couple hours on that one, James.
Well, I think what happened, the media resorted to what it knew, but on the other hand. And I think they were ill-equipped to deal with a threat of this magnitude. And I think that one of the things, you know, as I pointed out, they were able to deal with it in the civil rights era. They were pretty definitive on one side. They were certainly able to do it during World War II and like critical times like that. But somebody, you know, needs to really start teaching young journalists that sometimes there's an objective truth. And the objective truth should always be more important than objectivity. Now, I know everybody's going to say, well, James, how do you determine the exact, you know, people have been looking for the truth. It was evident to any mildly educated person with any sense of history, any sense of travel or the world, that this guy is a moral, ethical disaster, a criminal. On one hand, she had an incomplete housing plan. On the other hand, you wanted to use the military to arrest his opponents. Now let's talk to some people in a diner. I mean, that will always be the critique in this cycle.
James, John in Washington, North Carolina, asked, does the Republican establishment prefer Vance to Trump? John, let me tell you something. The Republican establishment is Trump. There is no Republican establishment. It's the Trump party. It's the Trump establishment. He owns them. They are all lapdogs, the House, the Senate. And J.D. Vance serves at his pleasure, as does Mike Johnson and the others. And so let's not talk about a Republican establishment. Talk about a Trump establishment.
Right. I've never seen a politician, I'm serious, and maybe Roosevelt was, but I don't know that, with such dominance over a political party as Trump has over the modern Republican Party. I mean, just no one else matters. Establishment, my ass. To the extent that there's, you know, an orbit of establishment people, you can just put Elon Musk and Peter Thiel and J.D. Vance right in there. And that's, understand, J.D. Vance is the objective here. And my guess is they're going to get it before 4 years.
Yeah, unless Trump objects. I mean, that's...
Or he's dead,
right. Well, I get him if he's dead.
Right.
Jane in Edinburgh, Scotland. I love our listeners from across the pond. Ask you, James, Trump's perpetual racist, misogynistic, and anti-democratic rhetoric resulted in the Democratic campaign having to become more reactive than proactive. Did he successfully dilute the Democrats' messaging?
Well, first of all, I love Edinburgh. I've been there. It's really a great, convenient city. It's a lot of stuff, very good walking. It's great. I love your city. The Democrats are going to have to make their own weather. And, you know, we're going to have to decide how we organize the opposition. We're going to put people in place in communications. We have to elevate certain groups over other groups. And we're going to have to come up with a process where the party can showcase its very deep and very talented elected officials. We just got to do that. And it's not going to be easy. I don't kid yourself.
Right. No, I think you're right. You know, finally, Chance in Las Vegas, Nevada. We cover the whole world, James, from Edinburgh to Las Vegas. Says a second Trump presidency would be worse because of, A, the lack of guardrails, or the get-out-of-jail-free card from the Supreme Court immunity decision. Well, it's both, but I think the Supreme Court's decision, this guy just says, hey, I can – he had that attitude anyway – which is why he was cheating and stealing when he was in the first administration. Now with that court decision, I'm sure he thinks anything goes. And the one thing he's determined to do is get even richer in a second term.
I'd give the guy fucking $100 billion to go, but he's not. He's going to get rich, but what he's going to do in the process, Ukraine is dead. Okay. Just any hope for anything in the Middle East was probably not very likely. It's less than likely now. The entire structure of the federal government is going to be changed. They're going to make a run at civil service. They're just going to do it. I mean, they told you they're going to do it, and what that means is it could be political appointments everywhere. I mean, meat inspectors and border immigration agents and park rangers and FBI, it's all going to be highly politicized. And they told you they were going to do it. Understand that. They're not just going to come up with a bunch of crazy shit. And what's going to happen, they're going to do this, and people are going to go to a fucking mall or a diner, and people are going to say, well, I didn't know he was doing this. I remember that eggs were cheaper when he was president. Well, there you go, because that's what you're going to get. That's what you're going to get. And then we're going to, you know, then they said, well, he pulled a fast one. We thought he was, you know, we We thought he was just going to secure the border. The border's actually secure right now.
Or he was going to bring down inflation, which has been brought down.
Yes, which has been brought down. But you know, I'm tempted to say, but I'm not going to say it because I don't mean it. But to some extent, some people deserve this shit.
Well, I want to.
But the other people I don't are going to get it just along with you.
I want to tell you out there, we know this has been a very negative show. It's a very negative week. Next week, I promise you, we're going to be back in an aggressive fighting mood. So come back because James Carville doesn't stay down for long.
I am. I got to work on plan B here, but plan B has to involve a kind of unified communications operation and some process to open up the party to multitude of talent. I just, the other thing, Noel, before we go, and at some level, I profoundly feel sorry for Joe Biden, but this is a tragic, tragic, tragic end to a really productive, I think highly distinguished career in American public service. And it really pains me that he has to face this, but by the same token, if he would have, he should have never run for re-election. That just is clear as a bell. But this is the end point of one of the more remarkable people in my lifetime who's made remarkable contributions to the country, but it's going to be, the stench of this is going to live with him for a long time.
This will tarnish his legacy forever, James, and it's sad.
It will. It will.
It didn't have to be.
But that's no doubt about it.
There are going to be a lot of insider books coming out. They're all going to try to cover their ass, but it's hard to think of anyone around him who acquitted themselves well, including his family. But, okay, we'll be back next week in a fighting mood. Thank you for listening. Thanks for listening to Politics War Room with James Carville, and I'm Al Hunt. As always, send your questions for us by email to politicswarroom@gmail.com or tweet them for next week's show at Politicon. Following this episode, we'd really appreciate it if you check out the links to our sponsors, Miracle Made, The Washington Post, and ExpressVPN in our episode show notes. We deeply thank you for supporting them because when you do, you help make this podcast happen. Now, to keep up with us, subscribe to Politics War Room on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen, and check out our Substack at politicswarroom.com. James and I are constantly adding new content, so go and take a look. You can also find other shows you might enjoy on the Politicon YouTube channel or when you search Politicon on your favorite podcast sites. And remember, please rate the show with a 5-star review, and we'll be back with another show as we continue our War Room planning.